Welcome. My name is Dr. Christopher Taylor, and I want you to know that it's okay to be sad, that it's okay to feel lost, and that it's okay to struggle, that we all struggle. But today, none of that matters, because today is about you, and today is about helping you become the best you possible. So for now, relax, take a deep breath, and enjoy some thoughts for your self-examination. Welcome back to For Self-Examination. I am your host, Dr. Christopher Taylor, and I gotta tell you, I probably sound like a broken record, but I am excited for this interview today. This interview is with Adam Stock, and he's gonna talk to us about money and happiness. And I know there is this taboo almost in our society about talking about happiness and money. We like to say money can't buy you happiness. And I think I've heard a comedian say, you know, but it can buy you a jet ski, right? So that's kind of what Adam's going to talk to us about today, is that money is, in fact, an important part of happiness. It's not the whole story, right? You can still be miserable and be rich and wealthy. But I think a lot of us tend to overlook the value of financial planning and financial security and happiness. You know, there might be things that bring you a lot of joy in your life, and money can be a vehicle to bring those things into your life, to enjoy those things more. But, of course, it's not the whole story. So Adam is definitely going to talk to us about setting healthy boundaries at his home life, because he chooses to work from home. Not because of the pandemic, but because of his career and his rules around hugging. Adam, a very strong man from Chicago, has a rule that if he's working at home, his daughter is not allowed in the office unless she needs a hug. How adorable is that? And how important is that, too, to know that we're never busier than the people that we love. So I love that, but before I give it all away, let's just get right into the interview after a quick word from our sponsor. This episode of For Self-Examination is brought to you by the Empathy App, the app made by therapists to help you find your path.
Hi, I'm Jerry, and I want to congratulate you for taking the first step on your path to a better you. Sometimes we feel a little overwhelmed. Whether it is with feelings of sadness or worry or anger, our emotions can feel a little too much at times, and that's okay. Welcome to Empathy.
You can find the Empathy app on any iOS and Android device at the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. You can also download the app through the website at empathicholdings.com. Download the app today and get started down your path. Okay, Adam, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Thank you. Doing quite well. Thank you. All things considered. It's been a little bit of a harrowing couple of days up here, but we're doing okay.
Yeah, how does the Windy City find you?
The Windy City today finds me well. It was a lockdown at my daughter's high school yesterday with some kids bringing some guns to school. So that was a first in our family and hopefully a last.
Ooh, everyone's okay, I hope.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good. That's good.
Just a little bit traumatic especially for her.
Yeah, I can only imagine. That sounds like a difficult experience to go through.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Well, tell us a little bit about you and your background and why you're here on the Happiness Podcast.
Sure. I grew up in this area of Chicago in the north suburbs and went to school up in Minnesota at a small college called Carleton College. Studied math and economics and spent the first few years out of college as an entrepreneur in a franchised, essentially a franchise business. And then in 1999, entered the financial services world as an investment advisor at Merrill Lynch. In 2002, moved to Lincoln National, which is our partner firm. We've been there since 2002, and I lead a team of 17. There's 17 of us, the Next Level Planning Group. And we basically solve a structural problem that exists in the financial services industry. I guess for the relevance of this podcast, we help people make people happy, happier. And I got 5 kids. So there are moments when I'm super happy about that and moments when I'm not. And it can be harrowing and I have no hair as a proof point for that, those challenges.
Sorry for those of you that are visual learners. Adam does join us today hairless. So thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Wonderful. I have 2 kids and that's 2. That's enough right there. I'm good. So
I'm with you.
I always see, you know, at the airport, like somebody with 5 kids and I'm just like, no, there's no way. You know, the show is about, or this series is about happiness. And we're kind of exploring the idea of happiness as a battery, that it has capacity and charge, and that it's sort of made up of these cells of boundaries, relationships, identity, and gratitude. And curious to hear about your experiences with happiness. If you have any stories you'd like to share with us, or I guess maybe clients that you've worked with that you've helped to become happy or happier, and what your thoughts are about that.
Yeah, sure. Well, as it relates to the professional work that I do, there's an adage that money can't buy you happiness. But I'm not sure that I completely agree with that. That there, money itself can't make you happy if you're not happy, but it can bring you a lot of things that can bring you more happiness. So, you know, if you are able to go on a nice vacation, for example, and you're able to do something that's nicer because you have money, that nicer thing might bring you more happiness. If you're able to work less because you have a certain financial level of financial success, like that working less might bring you happiness. Or, you know, if you are somebody who values a car, for example, like getting the car that you've always wanted might bring you happiness. And when I was growing up, I dreamed of building a house. And in 2012, we built basically my dream house. I'm really happy. I'm really happy when I'm in my house. And so, you know, a lot of the things are exactly how I would like it to be in the house. Of the things that I can control, can't control, you know. Can't influence, but can't control my kids, you know, turning it upside down. But, you know, I built a basketball court outside. I love basketball, makes me happy. And so these are just some examples. You know, we built a stage in our basement so that we can have concerts and live music. I'm happy when there's live music and when people are enjoying live music and over food and conversation and bringing other people together and they're happy. So yeah, those are just some examples of how money can buy happiness.
Wonderful. I really like this idea. We don't have any other guests that are in the financial sector, so I find it an interesting topic to tackle, really, is the influence of money into happiness. One of the things we have kind of talked about on the show is contentment, happiness, and joy, and how they're sort of related yet different. And we've got a lot of different opinions on them. It seems like everybody has a different view of each of them. But curious, do you see a difference between happiness and joy as it relates to wealth management?
That's a really interesting question. What I want to say, which is not, I'm not sure that this is going to be accurate, but like what's coming out for me is that joy feels more emotional, like a burst of joy.
Mm.
Like I was joyful when such and such happened.
Right.
But it doesn't seem like people are generally like, it doesn't seem generally like people's affect is joyful. I think more people have more of a happy affect than a joyful affect, if that makes sense.
Sure.
I mean, occasionally you can find people whose affect is authentically joyful consistently. Like, I imagine that the people that work at Disney World, for example, like they strike me as differently, happy than me. And whether that's authentic or not, we don't need to debate that. But like, some of them just feel like they're wired differently than me, and that, you know, they're maybe more joyful regularly than I am.
Well, I mean, it's hard to compete with somebody when they have a magical career, you know, Disney World, like there's no competition there, right?
Contentment seems very different though than happiness and joy. It seems like in a different category. For me.
Yeah, I struggle with that as well.
I think we had the word struggle at the same time.
We did, yeah. Yeah, I struggle with it too, with the sense of contentment being sort of a state of rest, right? Sort of a state of I'm content with where I am, but also being driven for more. What does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, this is a word and ethos that I have been wrestling with. You may be familiar with Amy K. Hutchins. She's a pretty renowned speaker, particularly within Vistage circles. Mm-hmm. And she's one of my coaches, and so I've been working with her a lot on this idea of contentment, because and this might have been what you were alluding to. I have this story that hard work equals success. I have a story that contentment is myself at rest, either temporarily or for an extended period of time. So while I can take a deep breath and I can say, like, right now in this moment, I'm content with my life, I'm not sure that I am ready to embrace the idea of being contented consistently for fear that it like rhymes or smells like laziness.
It does, doesn't it? And you know what's funny to me is it's so close to the word contempt, right?
Yeah, so I don't think that it has to be that way. And, this is funny. She said to me one time, 99% of all the entrepreneurs out there think like you think, Adam. They think that hard work equals success. And when they have a lull in their business and it's not doing so well, they're able to work. Entrepreneurs are able to work their way out of that lull. That usually leads to more success. And so it's like this self-fulfilling prophecy. right? And it's this pattern that cycles back and forth. It's like a Pavlovian response, right? You work hard, you get a result. You work hard, you get a result. She said the other 1% of wildly successful entrepreneurs just sit around laughing at the rest of you because they have figured out that they can have all of the success, financial success, time freedom, however you describe it, that they want to without working, without trading all of that financial success for time and hard work and energy. So I've been ruminating on that. You know, when people say things like that, they bother me, but in a good way, because like it's obviously stuck with me. And you know, how might it look if I work less and earn more? Like, can I be content? Might I feel like what else might I feel? But I want to sort that out at some point, because otherwise I'll be, you know, if I don't do anything different than what I'm doing now, keep working until I'm die at my desk. And I don't have an interest in that.
All right. Don't work yourself to death. Good words to live by. Okay. So boundaries, relationships, identity, gratitude. Any one of those speak to you more than the other?
Boundaries speaks to me. It was boundaries, relationships, gratitude, and
identity.
Jeez, I mean, they're all so important. Yeah. One of the authors who I was introduced to this year and whose work I really, really love, her name is Dushka Zapata, and she talks about boundaries as self-love. And she has a book that's called How to Draw Your Boundaries and Why No One Else Can Save You. And just this idea that I'm like a very meticulous, vigilant calendar, you know, scheduler in my calendar. And like, I think a lot about, well, how am I drawing boundaries around different things in my life? And what am I saying yes to? And what am I saying no to? And when I say no, what am I saying yes to? And when I say yes, what am I not allowing into my life? So, you know, yeah, I think boundaries are a critical component to happiness. Are you filling up your time? We have three limited resources in our life. We have limited amount of money. We have limited amount of time. We have a limited amount of energy, like personal energy. So are you organizing those three limited resources in a manner that will bring you happiness, or fulfillment, or some combination of the two?
Can you give us a boundary that you've instituted in your life that you've seen, you know, to help manage those better, time, money, and energy?
Yeah. So on a pretty regular basis, I will work 7 to 5, 8 to 5, and then, you know, 8 to 4:30. From 5 to 8 p.m., I rarely work. I leave my home office. I leave my phone in my home office, and I change hats from entrepreneur to dad. And from 5 to 8 p.m., on a pretty consistent basis, I'm helping my kids, helping with dinner, helping with bedtime, and all of that routine. So that was instituted just a few years ago. And, you know, without that, the former me would have just maybe scuttled a bunch of evening stuff, not really let my wife know about it. And then, you know, everything gets dumped on her and, you know, happy wife, happy life. So that 5 to 8 PM is really important in our family, for our whole family and for me. And also one of the things that we do is it's electronics free time. So our kids aren't on devices and it's just kind of a family pause and a break from the technological world and an opportunity to connect. So you know, that kind of goes into your second and third pillars of identity and relationships.
Right, exactly. And I love this sort of a geographical boundary and a technology boundary that you've kind of created here. Because I know, especially with emails and Slack and text messages, you know, it seems like whether you have a 9-to-5 job or you're an entrepreneur and you feel like you have to work 24/7, it seems like there is no separation between work and home, because now you can be emailed or texted whenever.
Right.
So I find it extremely important. And I love what you're saying about, I have this home office and that's where I leave everything. Like I physically leave my phone there because I'm making an active choice to set this boundary where I'm not available to anyone other than my family.
Right. Yep. And I think with more and more people working from home, I think that boundary is probably a difficult boundary to stay true to. I've worked from home 4 to 5 to 6 days a week for 15 plus years. So the COVID wasn't really different. It was different for a lot of the team members, but not individually, it wasn't that different for me. And I've always enjoyed that aspect of what I do. And then I have a lock on my door as well. Like it's a punch key lock. So my kids aren't running in and out of my office.
Right.
When I'm on all sorts of calls. But yeah, they know that when I'm in here, then they know that I'm working, and when I'm out, they know that I'm not. So that's also clear communication to them as well. Right. And then, you know, they're able to knock on, if they know that I'm here, they're able to knock on the door and interrupt me on condition that there's either an emergency, like a dire emergency, or if they need a hug. So that's what I've shared with them. If you need a hug, it doesn't matter if I'm on the line with my number one client, I'll stop the call. And I'll say, hey, have a rule with my kids. They're able to interrupt me if they need a hug. And hopefully that will be, you know, fairly received on the other end from my professional client.
We always need time for hugs. That is fantastic. And that actually reminds me of, I think, the greatest advice I ever got before I became a father was from Brian Kinsman, master of Scotch for Glenn Levitt. I'm sorry, Glenn Fiddick, excuse me. Oops. They're going to get angry at me for that one. I was lucky enough to meet with him in Scotland, at the distillery while my wife was pregnant with our first Ella. And we were staying in this house together, and as you do, you have a glass of scotch or two and a cigar, and then you start talking about life. And I'm asking Brian how he keeps it all together because he's so influential and travels so much, and he has two kids as well, and I have no idea what I'm doing. And he says, you know, he tells me that he just does two things. You know, he makes his passions, or their passions, his passions. So whatever they're into, he gets into. And then he, you know, makes times for hugs. So hugs his daughter, hugs his son, loves it. Says his daughter gives better hugs, but you know, which I agree with, I think. So, but yeah, thank you for sharing that. Anything you want to plug before we hop off?
I mean, we're talking about being, being dad's kids. And I would say the affiliation or connection that's been most transformative for me has been an organization that I'm involved in called the Front Row Dads. Mm. And Front Row Dads is an organization that was founded by John Vroman. I don't know how many years ago, maybe 10 at this point. And I was one of the founding members. And he's just pours and pours and pours. They have hundreds of members now all over the world. And it's just really an extraordinary organization. So you asked me if I wanted to plug anything. I guess that's what I would plug. It's if you're a dad and an entrepreneur and wanting to put business first. Wanting to put your family first and your business second, then this is a great tribe of fathers, men, entrepreneurs who are like-minded, all striving to do that as well.
Wonderful. Well, thank you.
And I don't own any of the Front Row Dads organization. I don't have any.
Totally fine.
Nothing at all. Just I felt like Jim Cramer there. With a disclosure that I, don't own the stock because there isn't any stock. It's not owned in my charitable trust. And it's just an outstanding organization, Front Row Dads.
Well, that's great. We'll be sure to link that information in the show notes as well. On a scale of 1 to 10, how happy are you in your life?
Oh, geez, that's a great question. Today, sun's shining and I'm looking across out my window at a forest preserve, and my family is physically safe, which was in question yesterday. And I'm pretty happy. I would say an 8, solid 8 out of 10. And I'm also an optimist. So I wake up each morning working hard to improve that score, and try to embrace some of the struggles on a day-to-day basis.
All right. Well, thanks for being here, Adam. We really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. If you've enjoyed this podcast, don't keep it a secret. Share it with your friends and family. Tell everyone. Put it on Twitter. We'd love it if you give us a 5-star rating and a review. We always love feedback. And then, of course, like and subscribe to make sure you don't miss an episode. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get yours. And as a reminder, Taylor Counseling Group is in the DFW area with offices from Dallas to Fort Worth and in Waxahachie as well. We are also now in the Houston and San Antonio areas as well. So if you or somebody you know might be interested in getting some counseling, feel free to give us a call, 214-530-0021. You can send us an email, info@taylorcounselinggroup.com, and you can look us up on the web at taylorcounselinggroup.com. You can find us on Twitter as well, at @TCG_Dallas. So if you need us, we're here, but if not, no worries. I just hope you enjoy the show. Again, what another amazing interview. Thank you so much, Adam, for being a part of that. And we really appreciate your time and being on the show. I have to say, I personally really enjoyed this interview. I think it was probably one of my favorites thus far. And I say that for several reasons. One, because it's so difficult to get people to talk frankly about money. We joke in the counseling profession that people are more likely to talk about their sex lives and issues in their sex lives than they are to talk about issues with money and finances. It is an important topic, and it's one that, for whatever reason, our society has really put a taboo on. You know, think about it. Like, when's the last time you talked to your friend about the salary that they make, or their concerns around money or budgeting or financial planning? How many of you listening right now have a financial planner? How many of you are thinking about long-term savings and retirement and you know, college funds and what I'm going to do after my 9-to-5 or my career, right? This is a big topic, and it's one that that I want to encourage all of you listening to think seriously about. Money is very important in our success and in our financial planning and in our futures, especially what do you want to leave behind for future generations? Are you of the impression that you should leave financial generational wealth for your grandchildren and great-grandchildren? That's a tough topic. It's tough to tackle, especially how money impacts happiness in our lives. And it's fair to say that money's not everything. And I know some very wealthy people that are extremely unhappy. And I know some people that are struggling financially that are ecstatically happy in their lives. And so I don't think the dollar amount so much matters as the intent and the strategy or plan matters as much. As long as we're intentional about what we're doing with our money and how we're saving or how we're planning. You know, Adam talked about looking outside of his window and seeing a forest preserve. I'm sure that's probably not a cheap house to afford. And maybe that's something that brings him a lot of joy because he likes to be surrounded with nature. You know, so maybe you want a lot of land and maybe that makes you happy, but you hate commuting. You know, maybe you don't mind commuting. And so it's a little bit easier to move outside of the city and buy a large chunk of land. These things matter, you know, so asking yourself these tough questions, sitting down with your spouse or partner, thinking through your future career choices and keep money, you know, at the forefront. Stay away, obviously, from the love or worship of money. Don't do it for the sake of getting more money. But we definitely need to have these conversations around finances, around financial planning. And so I'm so excited to have Adam here to talk about the importance of money in our day-to-day lives. So I do want to encourage you, take a moment, take some time this weekend, sit down with your family, sit down with some friends, and just think through, what do I want to accomplish in my life? You know, do I want to give generously to a foundation or a charity? Do I want to have a large ranch to leave to my children? What are your goals? What makes you happy? And think strategically about how money can be a vehicle for that. Again, not money for the sake of money, not the love or worship of money, but the use of it. It's a thing that's here. And I don't think it's going anywhere anytime soon. We might try to digitize it as much as we can with Bitcoin and NFTs, but all the same, it's not going anywhere. You know, before it was dollar bills, it was silver and gold coins. You know, at some point, we just have to recognize the fact that money is here to stay, kind of like the internet, I guess. But I just want to encourage you to think through that. The other thing that I loved so much about the interview as a dad myself was Adam's approach to family. You know, a lot of the talk around money was about providing a good life for his family. You know, the love of live music, the love of spending time with his family. Obviously, security and safety first, but then enjoying that financial success and allowing his family to be a part of that financial success and doing it for them. You know, he mentioned this organization, Front Row Dads, which you can learn more about at frontrowdads.com. And as a father of two young children, I have to say there's a lot of thought for me that goes into planning a good world for them, of giving them security so that they can go to the colleges that inspire them, so that they can learn and study what they love. And I'm very excited and hopeful to be able to allow a vehicle into a world that they want and love. You know, I think there's an Aristotle quote that says, you know, my grandfather was a warrior, so my father could be a merchant so that I could be a philosopher. I want to encourage you to look at money that way. And then I want to encourage you to set healthy boundaries around your time with work, especially if you work from home. I know many of us have been transitioned into home-based jobs because of the pandemic. But if you didn't, and if you've been working from home for a long time, or if you're moving into a job or career that requires you or allows you to work from home, what kind of boundaries are you making between home and home? Now, Adam mentioned that he leaves his phone in his home office, his work phone, all of his work devices stay in his home office. He walks out of the portal, that door, and into his home where his family is. He leaves work at work. Even though the commute is all of a few seconds, there's still this magic portal that he goes through, this door, where he separates his work life from his home life. And I think that's such an important balance. I've always found it difficult when people have said, you know, you need to have a better work-life balance, because work is a part of life. But work shouldn't be in our home life with our families. You know, we should have time for that, time for the passions that we love and enjoy. So I loved hearing him talk about that and this idea of being a front row dad, of being invested in his family and being there for his kids. So if that hits home for you, I hope you've been inspired by Adam's story. And I really want to encourage you to find time over the next few weeks to think about your financial future and about your boundaries with your work and your home life, to find time for family, and most importantly, to find time for hugs. I hope you've enjoyed this episode, and until next time, I am your host, Dr. Christopher Taylor, and I hope you've enjoyed these thoughts for your self-examination.